Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am really interested today to interview my friend and teacher, Claire Denice. I have known Claire for several months, having started her Senior Fitness, which goes by a different name at the Vashon Athletic Club. What do we call it? Boomers or something?
Well, Boomers are the yoga. Boomers and Beyond Yoga.
Oh, it's Boomers.
Senior Strong and Fit.
Senior Strong and Fit. But we all call it Senior Fitness. We know what's up. And Claire has this remarkable presence and ability to have people sometimes swallow the medicine of dealing with their own age, their own physical limitations, and the need to stay strong, the need to stay fit, the need to stay active, the need to stay social as they get older. And I've loved her classes. They're a great contribution to the island. And as this show is about all the different creative ways people are contributing, I thought it would be fabulous to have Claire on the show. And I think she knows something about one of my favorite topics, which is how do we keep our, not only our bodies, but our brains going as we age. So thank you so much for joining me right after class.
Yay. You're more than welcome.
Really great that you could come today. I was asking you before we started, because I really don't know your background, but have you always been a fitness champion? Do you have an athletic background? What led you into this work?
Well, I grew up as sort of a tomboy, and I guess I consider myself an aging tomboy. I did some other things before I got into fitness. I did some teaching, water quality, and one day decided that I would take this overview class of fitness and wellness, which can be defined slightly differently. And I loved the class. And then there was a gal that was going to host a personal training series of classes that led to certification.
Mm, where was that?
It was down at Grace Harbor College.
Oh, okay. Great.
And I was, because at that time I was doing some water quality work down at Grace Harbor College. And I went to the first class and thought, you know, I could teach this better and I don't even know the information. So a little voice in my head said, "What's stopping you?" And I'm like, "Nothing." So I decided to become a personal trainer on my own, which I did.
Fabulous. How old were you?
1998. Wow. So I was 46, 52, mm-hmm. Something like that, because I'm old now. Anyway.
It's relative.
So at least chronologically. So I took the certification class and passed it to become a personal trainer. And also, I took a certification to become a health coach. Then I took another sort of, and then I had my own business for, from 1998 to 2006 as a personal trainer. And in 2006, I moved down to Oregon and was a health coach at an Intel site, delivering the wellness program to Intel employees.
And we'll just say Intel Corporation, since not everybody might know or remember what that was.
Yeah, Intel, they make chips.
They make chips, or they did. Are they still in business?
They are currently. I don't know what the status is. Things are always in a state of flux, I believe. There were several major sites down in Oregon, and I was fortunate enough to be a health coach at one of those sites. And at Intel, they had gyms and opportunity to use a trainer as part of their wellness program. And they did health risk assessments. They did a finger poke. They gave you your cholesterol and your sugar profile, height, weight, body fat, that sort of thing. And then eventually I moved back up to Washington and ended up on Vashon and we were all laid off. So I thought I'd get another job as a health coach, and that didn't happen, probably because of ageism.
Mm-hmm.
So
because in the high-tech world, most of your clients are going to be the sort of up-and-coming young 30, 40.
Yeah, half my age.
Half your age, yeah.
So
who might not trust that you actually know a thing or two.
Well, so I ended up going to the athletic club and just sort of evolved back into personal training, and then ended up developing a couple of playlists for people, and continued to do some health coaching for people on an individual basis, and just sort of evolved. And we did the Peak Health show here with Lisa Morse. Around health issues.
Here, meaning Voice of Vashon Radio. You were a host as well.
Yeah. Yes, I was. And so here I am now teaching 2 yoga and 2 senior strong and fit classes each week. And I have a few personal training clients. As one person said to me one day, I hear you're the trainer for old people. old being a relative word.
Old being a relative word. But it's really essential work because, you know, people think, okay, trainers and fitness and all, and you have the idea of the 30-year-olds who are pumping iron at the gym, or some of us did. And then you go, like, to the athletic club, and you're on Vashon, where the median age is already old, you know, before
yes.
we start out. I think, what were we, 56 or something?
Yes.
Median age. And so training and fitness coaching actually is keeping people alive. It's not just about, you know, washboard abs and looking great when you go to the bar. It's about sustaining a quality life.
I think that's the operative word, is that you can have your quality of life.
Right.
And that your health span and your lifespan can be much closer, so that your health span doesn't decline rapidly at an earlier age, like, let's say, 50 or 60 or even 70, while your lifespan continues, but you don't have a very good quality of life.
Right, right.
So at one point in time, I came up with this idea of the boomer roadmap.
Tell me.
Well, I think when we're younger, we have the road sort of laid out for us. We know we're probably going to graduate from high school, probably go to college, maybe not, but otherwise have a job, maybe have a family, maybe get married, maybe not, but in general, there's sort of a roadmap for us. But when we are become a baby boomer and, let's say, leave the wheel of work, you know, you're not a small cog in the big wheel anymore, there's really not a roadmap anymore. So I kind of designed this roadmap where there are 4 major roads, the boulevards, whatever you want to call them. Health is one, obviously. Then the others are creativity and fun, and the last one is purpose or productivity. Now, I think if you are productive and you are creative, you may be already having fun. So of late, I kind of like adding community mm-hmm. into it as a piece of health as well. And then the side streets to the major roads are things like nutrition, and maybe if you have a faith, if you have your exercise program, whatever is important to the individual as your side streets. But the big streets are those 4.
I love that. I think you're right on. And doing it as a map makes it interesting.
Well, and it gives you something that can guide you.
Right.
You know, you don't have to check on Google on how to get there. You can write your own roadmap. And the other thing you can do is say, okay, where am I on my health on a scale of 1 to 10? Let's say I'm a 5, but I'd really like to be a 7 or an 8 or whatever. And you say, okay, I'm a 5. This is what I'm doing as a 5. What would move me to a 6? Well, if I went to the gym 1 more time per week, or if I ate salad for lunch 3 times a week, or whatever small change you'd be willing to make that would move your roadmap from a 5 on health to a 6 or a 7. So the same thing is, you know, with creativity. Now, creativity, you get to define what that is for you as an individual. It's not just for people who can paint beautiful pictures or act and think. It's whatever you want creativity to be. And and however you want to pursue it. And you can say, well, I'm only a 2 on creativity, so I think I'll take a painting class.
Yeah, you probably don't know this, but I wrote a book on creativity after midlife.
No, I did not.
Yeah, so that was kind of my beat, and I'm totally with you, because I looked out and said, there's certain things about your life you can't control, and certain things that may degenerate over time, but you can keep your imagination going, and you can keep your expression in any number of ways, and it doesn't have to be art or music or words or something like that, because we can all be creative, but there's something about it being intentionally creative.
That's the difference then. Yeah. You choose to do it intentionally, it's got a different impact.
Yeah.
On you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I love the components of your roadmap, and also the way they integrate together. Because one of the things that, you know, although people come to the gym to go to a fitness class, you know, and they kind of think they know what they're going, you actually integrate a lot. There are a lot of components of that class that people may not think about. And so you have your wonderful playlists, and I can tell somebody who's put a lot of attention to music and knowing that that playlist is going to carry people through the 45 minutes to an hour that they spend with you, and also be reinforcing something for them. You know, there's a power in music.
I don't know as I knew that when I first started doing it. In fact, I was terrified the first time I got up in front of the group to lead a class with a playlist.
Yeah.
And over time and putting together more playlists, I've had some fun with it and gone down the rabbit hole. Oh, yeah, I forgot about this person. And just a lot of different older songs and music that has come back to my mind. And my theory is that maybe even if you don't really feel like exercising today, once you get there, you'll stay, A, because you like the music, B, because you know some of the people. They're your kind of workout family.
Yes, absolutely.
And sometimes I like to ask like open-ended questions, sort of like life coaching questions, and get people talking to each other, just because it's helps to build the community and the socialization, which is also now through research being shown to be an integral part of aging well.
Totally, totally. And you do, you know, you'll just banter about, and it can seem like pregame bantering, but I also know that it's those questions that are weaving something. And the sense of community, especially, you know, if people are going to go to class 2-3 times a week, that is a major force in your life. And I've taken, I don't, you probably noticed, you know, I just go and ask people their names. It's so small, but I feel like if we're going to be here together, we should know each other's names.
I agree.
You know, and then we get this bonus of social engagement, which is, you know, from what I've seen about the dementia research, social engagement, physical activity are keys to staying
they
well.
They are. I think loneliness is also something. You can tie all these things back to the cost of healthcare, which is a bit where all this leads, is just the, as I said, the health span compared to the lifespan. And is your new hobby going to the doctor? Because you have so many appointments, and of course, if they're off island, they take a little more attention.
Yeah, I know. I think that was my mother's recreational activity was doctor's visits. You know.
Yeah. Well, and okay. What? But is that your form of creativity or fun?
No,
it's not.
It was not. It was not. Not for me. Not not for her and stuff. But I think you call your business Positive Aging. Is that the name?
Yes. Yeah.
And you have made reference, and I think there's something on the your site about brain work.
Yes, I call it BrainX.
BrainX. Was that a system that you acquired through training, or did you invent it, or how does that work?
Well, the BrainX part was my own invention, but I did take a class around exercise for the brain.
Yeah.
Through the Functional Aging Institute.
Really?
And it was self-paced, but they give you some tools and some exercises and things that you can do with people. Some of them are more on an individual basis. Of course, that depends. I have done a little bit of work with some people that are mentally challenged. That's been kind of interesting and fun to do. And one of the main premises is to try to do two things at once. So one of them being physical, such as, were you there the day when we did squats and played catch at the same time?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. Well, the idea of doing a squat and then you have a partner in the class and you're playing catch with a wiffle ball.
Mm-hmm.
So it forces you to focus, which is one of the things that tends to dissipate somewhat when you're older. So you have to focus in order to catch the ball. You can catch the ball with two hands or one hand, your good hand or your not so good hand. You could also do that against a wall, but you're going up and down while you're encouraging blood flow through your body, which of course goes through your brain. And it actually can contribute to the formation of new brain cells, which when we were younger, we thought we'd lost brain cells. We were done, that they were never coming back, but mm-hmm. we can build new ones. And it also helps with the synapses between brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of doing two things at once. I laughingly say, can you walk and chew gum? But it's a little more than that, you know. But so you're moving, maybe you're listening to a podcast or you're walking and doing a few little free weight exercises like in a pattern. So you have to remember the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So you challenge yourself in simple little ways like that. And you don't have to be perfect at it because what you really want is your brain to go, what's this new thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love it. You on your website, you have somebody doing exercises.
Yes.
And I don't know if I recognize the particular ones, but I'm a secret student of some of these physical ways to contribute to brain health. Some years ago, I got a handbook that was done by Brain Gym, and they have introduced series.
I have a tiny little handbook.
Yeah, it's an old faded book, but that was introduced into the school systems as a way to pretty dramatically help students. And they're using a lot. They don't talk about it in the same way. They use a lot of cross lateral movement, so that and we do that in class too. But you're rhythmically using your right, left, and then a friend who was into brains. Jim introduced me. She was studying another system that seemed parallel to yours, where you're working with balls and it's challenging to get the rhythm right and work with a partner and work with a ball, but it's supposed to be fabulous for your brain.
And I had a friend of mine ask me once if I would rather lose my brain or my body, and I don't have a good answer for that.
Right.
So the answer is, let's try not to lose either one if there are things that we can control. Now, what I would say when I first came back to the island, it was post-COVID, but COVID was something that none of us really had any control over, which is very unsettling. And, you know, some people need more control than others. But the idea presented to me was, okay, if I can't control that, what can I control? Well, I could take a walk every day.
Mm-hmm.
I could, you know, go to the gym, whatever it was that I could control. And adding on to that is doing things that stimulate your brain, learning a different language, if that's interesting mm-hmm. for some people, pursuing a musical instrument, something that you haven't done before that really makes your brain wake up and pay attention. And then the coaching part of it that's come around and been pretty evident to me, it's not only what do you want to do, is it's getting yourself to actually do it, even though you want to. Sometimes we don't.
I know. And which is one of the great things about classes, because there are so many things on my list that I could learn, that, you know, videos that I'm waiting to watch that I know are fantastic. But trying to do it all alone is just harder. And even when the physical therapist gives you the exercises you should do on your own.
Right.
How much harder
to do
that
at the physical therapy office.
Totally. Or in class, where you get this great reinforcement. Yeah.
But when with class, that's the whole point, is once you're there, I can't tell you how many people start personal training and don't continue. They think they will once they know how to do the exercises, but they don't. The idea of a class, you come to class. I don't think I've ever had anybody leave in the middle, unless they had to for some reason.
Yeah.
But most people will stick it out. And if they enjoy the class for other reasons besides just the physical benefit, then mm-hmm. all the better.
Let's talk about music and health, because music and brain health, because again, your playlists are super and you encourage people to sing along. And I take you up on it, you know, but I notice that a lot of people don't, you know, which is fine. Nobody is pressured at all to sing, but I happen to know that that's one of the things that can help us balance our neurological system, you know, help yes. us with the vagus nerve and resetting our nervous system is to hum or to sing. And having these classic hits from, you know, years before that often aren't that hard to sing. You don't have to know the words. You don't have to be on key. Nobody's asking you anything.
Nobody cares.
But I'm sitting there going like, we could all have this surprise health benefit, this brain health benefit just by humming along, folks. Why aren't we humming, you know?
You know, since I like to sing, I don't consider, I can carry a tune. I wouldn't ever consider myself like ready for the opera.
But you're in the chorale. Right?
But I am in the chorale. But I'm a support voice. You won't find me doing solos.
Okay.
But since I like to sing, it's hard for me to imagine that some people don't or haven't. Although I did have a significant person in my life, which I won't mention who he was, but he had, and he did sing, but he had a monotone voice. But he did sing. And I remembered thinking one time, oh my gosh, please don't sing. But then I thought, no, he should sing, you know. But he would sing like this with one note.
A drone.
Yeah. So that was good, though, that he was still singing. And maybe I will mention in class that if you don't feel like singing, just hum.
Yeah, I think that would be good because humming is a neurological reset as well. Humming helps your vagus nerve and stuff.
Yeah, I think some people, it's just never been in their repertoire. And so, I mean, but there are some people who sing very well off key, and I'm happy that they're just belting it out, you know? And some of the choruses are fairly easy to remember, and that's somewhat intentional.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. But it's also, you know, I think what opportunities does aging open up for us? And frankly, one of them is to sing off key in your health class, you know?
Well, and the other...
Who's going to care?
Another aspect of that is there's been some work done on patients who are fairly advanced with mental decline, mm-hmm. and they can sing.
Yes.
What was his name? Tony, sing with Lady Gaga. What was his name?
Oh, yeah. The famous Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett. I mean, he could hardly put sentences together, but he could sing his old songs. And the other piece of that is when you do stimulate people's memory of old songs, I don't know the ages of some people. One person told me they knew how old I was by the music that I used. But some of it is bit more current than old rock and roll from the 50s and 60s. But it does. There's people will tell me something like, oh, this was my husband's and my song.
Yeah.
Or one woman said, oh, these songs, my husband just passed away and I'm so sad to hear these songs.
Yeah.
I felt really bad about that. But
in a way,
I think that whole memory thing on some level is good for them. The music memory mm-hmm. is good for our mental health.
Yeah, I think there was a whole movie about how people would come out to the music. And they've done projects
yes.
studies to show people.
Meryl Streep was in one of those movies.
Was she?
Yeah.
You know, they hook on to, they have a headset of music made for them. And in those moments, they're listening to the music. You see the eyes open, the smile comes out, they're starting to lip sync good, and they change. And it's actually quite incredible to know that there are, even if you've lost a part of your brain to Alzheimer's, there are parts that are still there.
Yes.
And both art and music can touch into them. The other thing, and I think we do this indirectly in class, but it would be really fun to have more, it would be fun to have sort of a convening of a group that directly address this is rhythm. Because I have heard studies of folks, especially working with drumming and Parkinson's patients, that working with a steady rhythm allows them to walk in ways that aren't possible otherwise. So rhythm and Parkinson's have been really useful. And I think there's, isn't there a Parkinson's singing group, or is it a moving group?
There's a group that meets occasionally. Someone had a grant, and I'm not quite sure. I thought it was through King County And they had several, they called them dances.
Yeah, yeah.
I did go to one of them, and a lot of it could also be classified as sort of just activities or movements, mm-hmm. not necessarily dance patterns. And the several people whom I talked to thought it was well worth it.
Yeah, well, the research is in. In fact, there's a whole organization that's studying sound and healing, and Renee Fleming, the beautiful opera singer, yeah. has been behind that, as well as a whole host of scientists who are pulling together research from all over the world, or at least they were, unless their grants got dissolved right now. And it was pretty clear that this working with rhythm and music and dance could help with dementia and Parkinson's.
Do you remember when we were children that we used to have rhythm bands?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
There'd be bells and sticks, and one stick hitting on a piece of wood, maybe a triangle, just almost like sort of like reggae instruments.
Right.
That's an interesting thought. I'd be interested in pursuing that. And I actually used to have a bunch of sort of reggae-type instruments, and I can't think where they are at the present moment, but... And I might have donated them to a nursery school.
Ah, okay.
Remember. But it wouldn't be that hard to put together almost like a jug band.
That would be so fun. You know, so fun to have an afternoon of just making music like that and all. There's another thing that is great about music and the mind, which is that it brings people together kind of as a community thing. I was at a lecture at Town Hall some years ago with Bill Thomas, who's an MD who's done a lot in the area of positive aging. He's really a phenomenal guy. And there was tons of stories. The whole event was made up of storytelling. And at one point, he invited people to dance, you know, right in the front of Town Hall. And what was great was there was a whole community of folks with advanced dementia. I think they live in North Seattle. It's a pretty progressive, interesting community. And they came down and they danced. And it was so heartfelt to be dancing with folks, really connecting and dancing with this community that had dementia. And I thought, oh, man, wouldn't it be great to have more ways to not just have dancing for the dementia group, but having dancing that was, what's the word? You know, it's like...
Contra dancing or just
no dancing that's really come as you are, you know, whatever your brain capacity is, you know, whatever your brain capacity is, you are welcome here, whether you have Parkinson's, whether you have dementia, whether you're fully able-bodied, whether you're a crazy Zumba dancer, whether you're a contra dancer, whatever it is, you come, you dance, you're in community, and everybody's welcome. I think that would be really great. I mean, that would be a wonderful.
Well, if you do dance, you do automatically have to have a little bit of rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will tell me that that's not true. But so it could be that in evolving senior strong and fit,
yeah,
there's certainly the need for the emphasis on the weight training, but also adding in, as I've done, just a little one song that's like today, it was Boots, Scoot, and Boogie with my little pattern
of line dance.
People have to remember it, you know, like a little line dance thing. That helps me not feel stale.
Yeah.
Having done personal training for 20 some years, 28 years, something like that.
Yeah.
It is easy to think, oh, there's these muscles and there's these exercise for these muscles.
Right.
So adding in little pieces of that. And I actually think people like it too.
Oh, I do too, because you're doing the thing that you talked about. You're flexing the minds. You can see people who are severely challenged trying to figure out, you know, follow the steps. And yet it's a good challenge. You know, it's a good challenge. You do what you can.
Right. And that's just it. It isn't about perfection. It's about effort and about trying. And it's about making your brain wake up.
Right.
You know, so if you think about when you're younger, you're sort of upwardly and outwardly mobile. You're gaining new information.
Right.
Maybe you change careers and you change jobs and so forth. And then as we get older, sometimes we do the reverse. We do less. And you've heard when you first retire, it's go, travel, And then after a while, it's slow go. And then eventually it's no go.
So
finding those ways, and I think doing it in community makes it a lot easier. It's hard to do on your own.
Right, right. One of the arterials in your roadmap was purpose.
Yes.
Where do you look for purpose?
Well, I think my purpose is just being sort of a good example. And also, I have my foibles as well, which is part of being a good example. So it's not about being perfect. And, you know, never eating anything but kale and sweet potatoes and, you know. So that's kind of evolved on its own for me, doing things that I like, as I keep coming back to exercise and movement, because that's always been a part of who I am.
Do you have any vision for where you're going over the next, or what you'd like to do over the next 5 years?
I think the concept of positive aging can expand. I have a fitness manual that I put together as a personal trainer about, gosh, I want to say it was 20 years ago, that I've talked about reorganizing, and some of the information is still current and really good, and some of it could be updated. And so I've thought about working on that, you know, publishing it in some form, Substack or someplace like that, not necessarily in a book. I'm sure there are tons of books that you could get about. But sort of this, what we've been talking about is melding these concepts that don't seem as quite as relevant individually, but they are relevant collectively, because you, as obviously everyone is going to get old. Hopefully they get to get old.
So, if they're lucky.
Yes, yeah, if they're lucky, they get to get old and complain about it. If they want to complain, or they can embrace it and, you know, just be raring to go as they're moving into their leisure years.
Yeah.
So
I would think there would be a great audience. I mean, we're the perfect community, because you have a lot of still engaged, fairly well-educated seniors on this island. We abound in them. And so to be able to offer something that is, you know, that's got some proof and some track record and can really help people would be fabulous.
Well, and I want to say, I enjoy helping people. Often I'm surprised that I've helped someone. They'll say something to me. I love off-the-cuff remarks about, and now I can touch my toes, or something that they just kind of mention in an offhand remark that shows that they've gotten some benefit. And like, I would like everybody to sing, but if they don't want to sing, maybe they'll hum.
Maybe they'll hum. Yeah.
Or maybe they would even just, for them, that would be a really significant change in brain activity, because they haven't sung much in most of their life.
Yeah.
So I don't want to push anybody or force anybody to have to do anything, but gently, you know, nudging and providing the opportunities. Like, we had a wellness night, we did it 2 years in a row. We did wellness, women's wellness night at Vashon Athletic Club. And we had a lot of different practitioners there. We had some seminars. We had sound baths. We had balance things. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of into balance too. I wouldn't mind
balance
doing a balance.
Is a huge
like
thing.
Individual workshops on different topics. Like, maybe one could be rhythm, one could be on balance. Maybe it would be a series like Sunday afternoons in the wintertime or something like that, a time when people might be free. And it doesn't have to be like a lifelong commitment, but they could practice and learn with other people who are like-minded about that topic.
I think that's genius, because there's only so much you can give in a 45 to 55 minute class, and people are there for, you know, the fitness and the health benefits. And I'm like, yeah, but tell people that this thing that you're doing that's really a cross crawl is actually stimulating their brain in really positive ways, so that maybe when they go out, they can take some walking sticks and practice using the cross crawl, because that's going to help their brain. Well, that's all great, but it can overload, you know, the class and why people are there. But wouldn't it be great to be able to provide information like that to people? So
well, there could be a specific BrainX class.
Yeah.
And everything in there. And it could be quite very, can I say, very varied in terms of approach.
Yeah.
So it's not just about exercise. It's not just about music or rhythm. It could be something that requires people to, you know, paint. I don't know, or do some other aspect of, let's say, what they call those visual arts. It could be a whole variety of components.
Yeah.
In a program that was basically designed for brain health.
Yeah, I think that would be fabulous, and also a way for people to get out of the hole I was stuck in for so many years, thinking you had to be good, you had to have talent in order to have the right to express yourself in certain creative ways. You know, I joked in my book that I thought, well, real writers are writing novels in their bed when they're 9 years old, because there are girls on the island who do that, you know, and I go, well, I'm not a real writer. Or real artists are getting stars on their artwork when they're nine. So I'm not real. And you know, we all have these ways that we start shutting doors.
Well, you might not be a prodigy, but that doesn't mean you can't do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then my favorite art teachers are the ones who say talent is highly overrated against, you know, commitment, desire, you know, things that, you know, your willingness to just keep going, keep learning, you know, open the door. And if you're not aiming to have your art up at the Metropolitan Museum or your voice heard at the Metropolitan Opera, that, you know.
Yeah. Well, you if you only want to be a six instead of a five on your roadmap, that's great. If you want to be a 10, you're going to have to put a little more thought and effort into it possibly, but only by your own standards.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, a lot of us lived life having the world tell us what the tens were, not us. And so we were performing for what we thought the world wanted and also their judgment. And so to be able to say, hey, you're 60 or 70 or 80, isn't it time to take back the standard and you set the scale? You know, if you love doing this, then you do it. And if you can make a little progress, then yahoo. I mean, what else is there, you know?
Exactly. It's about, as we get older, defining our own reality a bit more, not caring quite as much, and doing what we love, I think, contributes to our health.
I think so much. Yeah. I have a new mantra this week, and I think I'll write a blog about it, maybe. I fell in love with this poet from Colorado who just died, and her name is Andrea Gibson. And she was upfront and personal about the fact that she had cancer, really terrible cancer, for several years. She was on the way out. And yet she was so full of life and so not wanting people to really live, you know, and she was going to live while she was here. And she knew she was going to die. So I think I'm going to have a little mantra called, what would Andrea Gibson think? What would Andrea Gibson do? Because I'm thinking, if I were in a senior fitness class with Andrea Gibson, she would not be holding back if she thought she wasn't going to be able to sing that B. You know, she would be singing. Or if I were Andrea Gibson, I wouldn't wait at Ober Park for it all to be filled up with dancers. I would be out there. You know, there's so many things that when you know that you're aging and you know that you're going to die, you can kind of claim the right to, because hell, why not? You know.
Well, this is a whole nother topic, but getting into the whole concept of dying and knowing if you do have, a terminal illness, then you do know. But we all know, essentially, that we will die. But what if it was tomorrow? What would you do today?
Right. Yeah.
And some people would be like, because they don't want to face it. So,
no. And some people, like Andrea Gibson, would say, I've never lived so fully. You know, I've never seized the day. I've never loved my partner as much as I do now, knowing I'm about to go.
I read a book recently about, the book was Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. And it was a delightful book, because it was about a therapist who was actually also in therapy as well as having clients. And one of her clients had a terminal illness. And she was committed to living life to the fullest.
How wonderful.
It was very moving.
Well, thank you so much for helping us on the island have that opportunity to keep our bodies going along with our minds.
Well, it does help me too.
So. Yeah. Well, you share that. You know, you're one of us in a certain, you know, how old are you now?
79.
Oh, that, I wish people could see this face, you know, because I hate it when people say, oh, you look so good for 79. You just look good, period. You know, and it's really nice to have a face to be able to say, this is what a fit 79 looks like. Oh, I'm going there. How can people find out about you? Or do you go through your website or what? Or go over to VCA?
You know, probably here on the island, the easiest way is to get a business card at
the Athletic Club.
Which has my phone number and my website and so forth on it.
Yeah, and people don't have to be members. They can do a daily thing and try out your class as well. So,
Yeah, they're, I think, invited to come to a class for free. They sign a waiver. And then they can, you know, decide whether they would like to join.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way. And there are people who speak to me whom I'm not quite sure I know who they are, but I think it's usually the connection through the athletic club.
Yeah. Well, great work. Thank you so much for the contribution to the community. And I want to keep hearing what you're discovering about aging, health, and the brain, because it's a fabulous topic.
Okay. I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Good enough. Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.